Weber, 9 o'clock sharp on a Tuesday morning before Pesach. We have a mezumen. We'll see who else drifts in at this busy week. We're doing mechirat chametz. They should be here because they're all planning on selling it.
Okay. I want to do mechirat chametz, but not so much mechirat chametz as how halacha develops sometimes. This is a very good example of, you know, often you get to point B and it's not clear how you move from point A. But Mechiras Chametz is an example where everybody can point to, like, a specific moment in time where, not God forbid, the halacha changed, but the circumstances changed and one particular posek came up with an innovation that all of a sudden, you know, cured us of certain problems, but as I'll point out, they introduced a whole new range of problems. And problems we should deal with.
You get this back in the Zayat, but I don't remember.
Could be. So as an aside, I also want to make some observations on, you know, the relationship of Chumros and Kulos. And you'll see how oftentimes, you know, what looks like a Chumra turns into a Kula. And the opposite can also be the case. Okay? Really what we want to do is get to how we started to where we are today, where I assume almost everybody sells their chametz in one form or another. Okay, so let's start. It turns out that it's already a Mishnah that anticipates the sale of chametz, but not in the way that we recognize it today. The Mishnah in Psachim Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph says, Kol Sha'ah Shemutar La'achol, so long as you're allowed to eat chametz, you can feed it. Bruce, we need cheese. Okay?
Thank you.
You can feed it to your behave, you know, to your animals and to your birds. And you can sell the chametz to a guy. And you're permitted to get pleasure from the chametz. Let's just review. What do we have? The Mishnah says, so long as you're allowed to eat chametz, which means minat Torah until chatzos of Erev Pesach, so long as you're allowed to eat chametz, you're allowed to feed it to your animals, and you're allowed to sell it to a guy. Okay, now, at first it sounds like, oh, what a big chiddush, you're allowed to sell it to a guy. Then you realize, well, of course you're allowed to sell it to a guy. If I can eat chametz, why can't I sell it to a guy? Also, why is this not helpful for our purposes, for what we know as the sale of chametz? Why is this not helpful? Because it's a real sale. Meaning you're actually, you know, you own a supermarket, and Ahmed comes in, and it's Erev Pesach in the morning, you sell him chametz. That's not what we call the sale of chametz. That's an actual sale. He gives you money, he takes the chametz home with him, and he eats it. Okay, let's just finish the Mishnah. Of our Zmano, if it's no longer permissible for you to eat chametz, then asur b'hana'ato, you're prohibited from getting any pleasure from it. Means, of course, you can't sell it. V'lo yasik bo tanur v'kirayim. And literally, you can't use it to make a bonfire, which you'll cook over. Why? Because that's getting pleasure from chametz, and you're not allowed to do that once it's asur.
Even if it's not your chametz? Like, you don't own it when you do that? You sold it to someone, and he says, you know what, I'll pick it up later, but in the meantime, if you need to burn a little bit, be my guest.
I don't know what that case means. If it's not yours, it's not yours. But if it's not yours, you can't burn it. If a guy says to you, you can use my chametz, you're in trouble. You have to say no. You know,
it
would obviously undermine the validity of the sale if he sold it to him and he said, okay, but by the way, you could use it in the interim.
No, he's picking up your comments and he only put so many boxes in his trunk.
So in the meantime, he says,
go ahead and burn it.
Yes, but it's his chametz.
Yeah.
Do you often say that after you buy something? Listen, but in the meantime, you could burn it. You could burn it. It's obviously not yours if that's the case.
If you don't like it, you can burn it.
Okay. So, this isn't that helpful, although you see this, all this basically means is that in the ordinary course, you could sell chametz. Now, the Gemara asks, whenever a Mishnah is like so obvious, the Gemara right away in number 2 says, Machro l'nachri pshita. Well, of course you could sell it to you could eat the chametz, of course you could sell it to a guy. What's going on? So, interestingly, he says, La'afuke mehaitana. to tell you that a certain position is wrong. Ditanya beishamay omrim lo yimkor adam chemtzo lenachri. Beishamay says you're not allowed to sell your chametz to a goy. Ela imkein yodea bo sheyichle kodem pesach. A fascinating shita. Beishamay says you're not allowed to sell chametz to a goy unless you know for a fact that the goy will eat the chametz, consume it completely before Pesach. Where does that come from? Okay, Ubeis Hillel Omrim, luckily we pass like Beis Hillel, who say, Kol Sha'asha Mutar La'achol Mutar Limkor. No, if you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to sell it. Now, what in the world is the explanation for the Shita of Beis Shammai? Again, Beis Shammai says that today, if I'm going to sell chametz to a guy, I have to make sure that the guy will finish the chametz in advance of Pesach. Again, we don't pass in this way. But what could it be? So Rashi says right underneath too, Kodem sheyavo Pesach, dekosavri mitzvah alav leva'aro min ha'olam. Because Beis Shammai says there is an obligation, there's a mitzvah min ha'Torah to destroy your chametz, v'lo sheyehei kayam, and it can't survive. Now, this is interesting because Beis Shammai points out, well, we all know, there is a mitzvah of hashpasas chametz min ha'Torah. We are supposed to get rid of our chametz. So Beis Shammai says, well, if you're supposed to get rid of your chametz, that really means getting rid of your chametz. So now you ask yourself, could Beis Shammai really think that on Chanukah, if I sell whiskey to a guy, I have to be choshesh, that in 3.5 months or 4 months, Pesach is going to come and I have to make sure... It can't be. It has to be, I'm adding this, but it's for sure true. It has to be that there's a point in time at which you become conscious of Pesach, and Beis Shammai says you have to be concerned about that. My best guess, based on other halachos, is 30 days. Purim, Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, Shol and Vidosh and Bilchas HaChag, 30 days before Pesach, you have to start, you know, having Pesach in mind. And so my guess is Beis Shammai would say, if you're selling chametz to a guy within 30 days of Pesach, you have to worry that, you know, he has to get rid of it. But the real point of Beis Shammai, who we don't paskin like, is that there's a point in time at which I'm supposed to actually destroy or get rid of my chametz. There is a mitzvah of Tashbisu. We all symbolically, or in less, we'll talk in a minute, we burn chametz erev Pesach. Right? That's, why don't we just throw it out? Because that's the mitzvah of Tashbisu, of actually destroying chametz. But again, we paskin like Beis Hillel, who says that so long as you can eat chametz, so long as you can get hanah from chametz, you can sell it to a guy. Now again, why is this not helpful for our purposes of selling chametz? Because this is an outright sale. It's clear that the guy gives you full value, it's now his for all purposes. But, already in the time of the Mishnah, in the Tosefta at least, there is a case which seems to help us out a little bit. Number three. The Tosefta tells a story. Yisrael v'goy shehayu bo'in bisfina. Okay? Once upon a time, it was a Jew and a Gentile on a boat. Sounds like a joke. Okay? V'chametz biyad Yisrael. And it's obviously before Pesach. And the Jew has chametz. So let's assume, I'm filling it in, but let's assume the boat was supposed to get, you know, in those days, you know, the trip could take a week, it could take a month. Let's assume the boat was supposed to get in before Pesach. This guy's on a boat, he has valuable chametz with him, and it's going to be Pesach. Okay, so the Tosefta says, shockingly, Harezem mochro lenachri. The Jew can sell the chametz. He's on a boat. Again, I can't tell you. I assume it's not a rowboat. I assume it's also not like the QE2. It's, you know, I don't know. There's 20 people on the boat. Who knows? Hareza mochel lenachri. He could sell the chametz to the guy. Vinosno bimatana. Or he could give it to him as an outright gift. Vichozer vilokeach mimenu la'achara pesach. And he can get it back after Pesach. This sounds very much like what we do. Mm-hmm. Says this Tosefta, Ubilvad sheyitno lo bimatana gimura. So long as he gives it or he sells it in an outright sale, it means he actually transfers all ownership of the chametz to the guy on the boat, but the guy understands he's doing it because he's stuck on a boat and he has valuable chametz, and the guy understands that what the Jew really wants is for him to be able to sell him the chametz back again after Pesach, or to give it to him after Pesach. But the Tosefta says that's completely fine, and the Jew avoids, what's he trying to avoid? He avoids the Isser of Bal Yera'ehu Bal Yimatzeh, the Isser of owning chametz on Pesach. So you look at this Tosefta, you go, wow, it's a Tosefta. Tosefta is written at the time of the Mishnah by Tanaim, and it's like in the 400s. It means Jews have been selling chametz, you know, since the 400s. What's the big deal? So the answer is, this is a partial precedent for what we do, but not a complete precedent. Why not? Why is this case not so usable for us?
Because we're not on someone.
So the first thing is, it sounds like it's a bidi'evet case. Nobody thinks you should plan, you know, go to the store, buy all this chametz, and then sell it before Pesach so you can get it back afterwards.
Take it with you
on the boat. This is a case where the guy got stuck on a boat. Let's assume his livelihood, this chametz. And so, in a bidi'evet case, where you have no choice, you're going to lose a lot of money. So it's true, the Tosefta allowed you to sell. But that's one. But there's a second distinction in this boat case that does not apply to us, to what we do. Can anybody guess what it is? What happens? How does the sale go down? What would you say?
Did you make it a real sale, you're saying?
Yeah, if you just read the Tosefta. The Tosefta says, you know, they're on a boat, and the Jew has a six-pack or a case of beer. Okay? What does it say? Hareza mochlo lenachri v'notno b'matana. The way I read this, and I'm sure it's right, is physical possession of the chametz is given to the guy. Mm-hmm. The Jew doesn't keep the chametz. He actually picks up the six-pack and gives it to the guy. And the guy, you know, he moves it from his suite on the Aloha deck, you know, to the whatever the guy's deck on the
celebrity.
The gold play, you know, the gold deck, and the guy takes physical possession. So that's a huge distinction, because in our cases, if anybody here sells chametz, nobody even knows who the guy is, who you sell it to, and certainly nobody takes the six pack and gives it to the guy. Mm-hmm. So again, you have here a precedent, but really just a partial precedent.
It's also stira. It says, because how can it be that you sell and give at the same time?
It should be read or. Yes.
You're sort of parsing the nukno away from the matana in order to...
I know what's coming next. I know how everybody reads the Tosefta, and I know that that's how you're supposed to read it. You're right. That you caught me. I tried to use the word venotnolo, which is obviously not a physical transfer. The venotnolo is just the technical legal way that it gets done. You're absolutely right.
The notnolo can be to the matana, and then I see a big fat stira, because is he selling it or is he giving it?
So the answer is, you have two choices. You have two choices. You can either sell it or give it to him in an outright gift.
So it's an O. It's
correct.
O.
That's
but
how you should read it.
Either way, the fact is he's transferring the possession.
But I'm saying to you that the way everybody reads it, Tosefta, and I'll show you in a second why I'm sure, is that the six pack left your room and went to, and that's a significant issue. That's a significant fact, because when you're looking for the transfer of ownership, let's face it, if it's sitting in your room, it's a bad fact. I'm not saying it's dispositive, but it's a bad fact.
It creates a problem for what we do today.
Well, I'm saying, so what I'm trying to do honestly is say, you could see that the idea of the sale of chametz existed in the time of the Mishnah, but it's not what we do.
That could just as well be in the hold of a ship, which is what we do today.
It's not what we do today. You put your chametz on the hold of a ship?
No, but it's far away. And nobody
Where's your chametz on Pesach?
Nobody sees it.
Where's your chametz?
In the hold of a ship. nobody sees it.
This house looks like a ship.
That nobody sees it. You don't have to read it that way.
Let's just say, after this year, we're all going over to your house to see...
No, but you can come to the hotel.
I want to see, and we can all get rooms on the Lido deck
you can
of
put
your
put
house.
Wallet and passport and jewelry in the safe in the hotel. And you could sell it to another guest without ever transferring anything.
Bruce, it's the year 400.
Well, they're on a boat.
Forget.
They're on a boat.
This isn't the Titanic.
As Barry says, it is being. It could really be held.
Barry's just giving me a hard time. And I'll show everybody why they're all wrong. Believe me. It would be better, it's true, it would be better if we knew exactly what kind of ship this is. But I'm telling you, and again, I always have this advantage, I don't mean to brag, but I've prepared. So like, I know what's next.
But it is written in a funny way.
It is written in a funny way, but what...
Sale, return, gift, return.
Correct. The one thing I'll grant you is that it's what we would call a ha'arama. A ha'arama means some kind of legal fiction, in that the plan always was for this guy to get his six-pack back after Pesach. It's absolutely true. That was clearly the plan.
How do you see that in the words there?
Because it says,
because
and then afterwards, you know, v'choze v'lokech mimenu la'achar ha'Pesach. It's clear that when you said to the guy on the ship, you basically said to him, listen, I'm stuck, right? I'm stuck. I'm on a ship. I have this very valuable beer. I got nothing to do with it. Can you help me out? Now, again, let me just make this clear. It has to be the case that the guy can take the beer and drink it and not give it back to you, and you have no legal recourse, because it was an outright sale or it was an outright gift. Now, I suppose you're counting on him. You're counting on him to keep his word. But that's the bottom line. So again, what do we have? If we're trying to trace the development, the idea of the sale of chametz with the intent of taking back after Pesach existed already in the time of the Mishnah, but A, it was only b'di'eved, you couldn't plan to do that, and B, the chametz was physically transferred in an outright sale or gift to the physical possession of another passenger on the boat.
What do you mean you couldn't plan to do that?
B'di'eved means the Mishnah, the Tosefta says you happen to be on a boat and you happen to be stuck. I'm saying the clear implication is a month before Pesach you can't buy all this chametz with the idea of take the worst possible situation. You go in, it's a week before Pesach, and you go into Costco or duty free. There's a huge sale on pasta, like a historic sale on pasta. And so you say, you know what? I'm going to buy $1,000 of pasta. No, it's a week before Pesach. It's a big deal. I'll sell it.
Sell futures.
So I'm saying that's not supported by this Tosefta. This Tosefta is, well, I have $1,000 of pasta, and I was planning to get rid of it in the month that I was home before Pesach, and I got caught in a storm at sea, and now I'm stuck. Okay.
What happens if you're a store owner, and you have this huge sale on pasta, and for you, it's a, you know, you make a nice profit if you buy it for Pesach?
Okay, so store, we'll come to store owners, because you'll see that's where the halacha kind of developed. Let's just look and see how this was codified, la halacha. Look at number four, the Beis Yosef who lived in, when?
1653.
You made that up. In the 1500s.
Mid-1500s.
In the 1500s, you're very close.
You're up 100 years. You're, you, you, for that
you were very close. He lived in Tzfat in 1500, but it's very important to see this. So basically in the 1500s, this is what the Beis Yosef says. Because of Betrumas Hadeshen, he quotes a Rishon from a few hundred years before him, Simon Kuvchath. A person who has chametz. Okay, this is closer to what we have. A person realizes he has a lot of chametz and he wants to give it to a guy. An outright gift. Va'oto goy ha'Yisrael makiro v'yodea bo. He knows the guy. Okay? The guy's his neighbor. And he's a nice guy, and they have relations, and the guy understands it. He's not going to touch the chametz at all. Rather, Ella, Yishmereim lo ad la'achar ha'Pesach. V'yachzor v'yitneim lo. The guy is completely trustworthy. He's going to take your beer, put it in his basement, and give it back to you after Pesach. Yeira'eh, says the Beis Yosef, it appears to Shari that such a thing is permissible. Rak sheyitneim lo b'matana gemura b'loshum tanai. He has to give it to him in an outright gift, an outright unconditional gift. O sheyimkareim lo mechira gemura b'davar muat. By the way, that's how I knew how to read the Tosefta, because he does the same thing. Two possibilities. Either an outright gift, or he sells it to him in an outright sale, even if he, you know, it's for a reduced price or for just a down payment. Okay? So, here you have almost 1,000 years later, or maybe more than 1,000 years later, this Tosefta is kind of codified, and it's codified not just in a bidyeved way. He says a person finds himself before Pesach with a lot of chametz, and it's valuable, and he doesn't want to lose all that money. He can sell it to a guy. Now, why is this still not a precedent for what we do, although it's getting closer to it?
Because it's matana rather than mechira.
No, it's even. No, it's matana there. Or mechira. It's because the last words on the first line. What's the main thing? Chutz labayit. It means the beer is not in the hold of your ship that you live in. The beer is in the possession of the guy. Right? And that's huge, because that's not what we do. But again, you see it's sort of moving a little bit at a time, in the sense that it's not a ship. You're right, you just happen to have a lot of chametz. The Beis Yosef says you can sell it or give it as a gift. Again, what are the conditions? It has to be outright, so that if the guy kept it or drank it or did anything else with it or sold it on, you would have zero recourse. And it has to be actually transferred to his physical possession.
Was this whole discussion meant for a person in his home as opposed to a business?
For sure. For sure, it's the person in his home. You just read it, and you...
So it could be a relatively small loss as opposed to a huge loss, which...
Who knows? Again, depending on where a person is economically, you know, a small loss could be a big loss. The other thing is, it's not institutionalized in any sense. You go to your neighbor, there's no rabbi involved, there's no contracts, there's no communal, you don't click on a button on the internet. You go to the neighbor, the guy is a guy you know, you show up with your beer, he puts it in his house, he owns it, it's true, he understands completely. It's a legal fiction, except it's an enforceable legal fiction, which is very, very important.
You don't buy these
legal things, right? Legal fictions are real. They're just fictional. What I mean is, a legal fiction, it has to be the case that it's enforceable under law. It means everybody understands that the intent is to avoid bal yirah bal yimatzeh, but so long, everybody understands when you put up an eruv, the intent is to avoid the isra of hotzah on Shabbos. But the thing that you did halachically is real. Okay, we could have a long discussion about is it what the Torah wanted, what, you know, but it's clear that in order for it to be, for the fiction to be real, I know it's a funny way to say it, you have to do it for real. Like, why, you see somebody saying, and I fear that we'll come to that day, where a person says, why do you have to check the Eruv? It's just a joke to begin with. But the joke has to be real.
I could have a beer party with your beer. Absolutely. They might even invite you.
Well, you couldn't, because it's Pesach.
But, I mean, before, is it before
you
Pesach?
You never buy
it. It would be most painful if he invited you to the beer party that...
But at least here, the fiction is at least supported by Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. I mean, which is not obviously.
We're getting there. Correct.
He doesn't give you the money.
He really relies on Beit Hillel in
for sure. Beishama, you're sunk. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
It's only Beis Hillel.
Need that Tosefta is like a neat addition. But like,
I don't. Well, I'm not sure. That? I'm not sure. You could be right. You could be right. I'm not sure. I think that
because you can sell it. You can, you know, up to Pesach, you can sell it.
No, but the selling it was a real sale. This is not a real sale. So you're right. I can't tell you definitively that the Beis Hillel is relying on that Tosefta. It's my guess. But you're right. I can't be sure. The Beis Yosef grew up and he became the Shulchan Aruch. That's the book that we use. And number five, you'll see, not surprisingly, almost exactly the same thing. Says the Shulchan Aruch, V'im mecharo o nisano le'ino Yehudi. Again, either one, sale or gift to a non-Jew. Same thing. Shem michutz labayit. That's the key, right? It's outside of your house. Kodem ha-Pesach. Afal pi sheha Yisrael mecharo le'ino Yehudi. He knows this guy is completely trustworthy. He's not going to touch the beer. Rather, he's going to watch it till after Pesach. And he'll give it back to him. Mutar. Ubilvad sheitnanulo matana gimura belishum tanai. Okay, it has to be an outright gift, unconditional. Or an outright sale. Again, b'davar mu'at, I understand to mean he pays you the down payment. Okay. Aval. Here's interesting. Matana al menat lahachzir lo mahani. A gift on condition that he returns it to you doesn't work. Now that's interesting. Who ever heard of a matana al menat lahachzir? Yes. The answer is that in halacha, a matana al menat lahachzir works as a matana. So for example, the most famous case is the first day of Sukkos. It says, you have to own your own dalet minim. The rest of Sukkot, you don't have to own it. So all these communities in which people couldn't afford their own dalet minim. So what they would do is, and it was endorsed by halacha, they would give it matana manat lachzir. I would use it, then I give it to you, and I say, I'm giving it to you, an outright gift, on condition that you return it to me. And then you give it to the next guy, next guy, next guy. So here, the Shulchan Aruch says, we're not going to play around with that kind of a game on Pesach. Okay, it means that it does exist as a halachic standard, but with respect to the fiction of the sale of chametz, the fiction has to be supported by law, and by law it has to be the case that I have no claim to this chametz. Okay, finished. So that's where we get to in the 1500s. Now, what's so fascinating about tracing the development of the sale of chametz is that everybody knows that the next step was the big step, that the Bach introduced the next big step. So flip over just so you'll know who the Bach is, because it's good to know this. Rabbi Joel Sirkis, born in Poland, 1561, died in 1640, basically one of the leading halachic authorities in the generation after the Ramah. The Bach is actually buried in the Ramah's cemetery, outside of the Ramah's shul in Krakow. I've been there. He wrote the Bais Chadash on the tour. That's how he became known as the Bach. Okay? He was a major gadol in the early 1600s in Poland. He, if you know who the Taz is another commentary on the tour and on the Shulchan Aruch. The Taz was the Bach's son-in-law. Okay? There's a story, everybody tells a story, I think it's really true, that the Bach was giving shir like in his house or something, and during the shir they could not remember a pasuk, and his daughter was listening in from the other room, you know, and she came in and she said, she told her father what the pasuk was, and her father, the Bach, said something like, you know, yafa'at kalivana, you know, you're beautiful like the moon. And the Taz said to the Bach, you know, Rebbe, would it be okay to be mekadesh the levana? Anyway, so he married her, so he became the Bach's son-in-law. But the thing to know is, in the early 1600s, in Eastern Europe and in Poland, what was a big industry for Jews?
A bar, whiskey.
Whiskey. Whiskey was huge.
Poles were not allowed to own bars.
Okay, so not surprisingly, how does halacha develop? There's a need, right? Something happens that requires people come to the Bach, and they go, we're in trouble. What are we going to do? So watch, and watch the greatness of the Bach, and you'll see why we, you know, how halacha works. Says the Bach, openly and honestly, he says, Ubimidinazo, we're number six, Sherov Masa Umatan, Hu Biyayin Saraf, says the Bach, we live in a city, in a state, in a country, where most of the commerce is Yayin Saraf, what's that?
Whiskey.
Okay. The Bach says this idea that you're going to move, you're going to physically move your distillery, you're going to physically move, you know, I don't know, massive amounts of inventory to a guy's house is not going to work. Bifrat lamachazikim beurdina. I think urdina was like the license that you had to sell, you know, to sell liquor. And so you couldn't just transfer, you know, it wasn't so simple. Okay? So watch what he says. Yesh, this is the key line. Yesh lehatir b'inyan zeh, says the Bach, in this situation, we ought to be able to be matir, to allow, sheyim kar legoy kol hachametz shebecheder, to sell the goy the complete inventory, vegam hacheder atzmo yim kar legoy. Not just the chametz, but sell him the room. What did the Bach just do? It's brilliant. What did the Bach just change in halacha?
Well,
Nothing. What was the halacha? The halacha was you needed to transfer physical possession of the chametz from the Jew to the goy. Says the Bach, I'm not in a position to change halacha. What I'm in a position to do is to innovate so that the circumstances now match up with the halacha. It's true. Until 1605, I'm making it up, everybody understood the only way to sell chametz was by physically transferring the chametz to the possession of the guy. Now comes the Bach and says, I agree, you have to physically transfer the chametz to the possession of the guy, but I have a really great idea. You can physically transfer possession of the chametz by selling the guy the room in which the chametz is stored. And now, by all accounts, who owns the chametz? The guy. Where is the chametz situated?
In the room.
In his room. This is the secret to halacha. Now, but it comes with conditions. Watch how different this is. By the way, anything we do nowadays can be traced back to these two sentences in the Bach. Everybody knows that to be the case. But see how serious the Bach was about this. He wasn't into complete, you know, fiction. Second paragraph. He says, first thing, umihu. Sarich limsor legoy gam hamafteach. Says the Bach what? If you're going to pretend that you've sold him the storeroom, he's got to be able to get in.
You have to give the key.
So he says, right, you absolutely have to give the guy a key. What?
The star says he wears the key.
Well, you're getting too far ahead. Mm-hmm. It's clear you could already see traces of the Bach mm-hmm. being traced back to our thing, although the Bach doesn't say you should write down who has the key. The Bach says give him the key. Okay, it's just interesting to watch how things move from the Bach.
Well, because it was another property somewhere else. It wasn't your house.
No.
It was your distillery.
It was your distillery.
No, but it wasn't where you were living.
So what? You wouldn't be able to do it. We only have what the Bach says. We ought to at least read what the Bach says before we start stretching him beyond recognition. Okay? Dim lo kein, because if he doesn't have the key, kevan didat Yisrael lachzor v'liknot chametze achar ha-pesach. It's clear, everybody knows what's going on. He's fully intends to get the chametz after Pesach. Hava le kemascher beso v'gemaro pisuk hadamim b'yud gimel. Basically, without reading it all inside, says the Bach, it's as if you rented the house away before this man chametz, where you still have an obligation to clean your house because it's still yours. Okay. Okay. Velo dummy lemi. That's the fourth line from the bottom.
You're cleaning his house.
But he says if you don't give him the key, he's concerned that it's not a real transaction. Velo dummy lemi she kana be'echad midakiak naot. He says it is true that amongst Jews, what's the kinyan that we use most? It's a joke, but we use it because it's halachic. Chalipin, meaning you pick up a handkerchief, you pick up a pen, right? It's all symbolic. So the Bach says it's true. We do symbolic kinyanim all the time, and we don't necessarily require the transference of the key. But he says, the bechametz yesh lahachmir. But chametz is an iser kares. It's a real serious situation. You have to be machmir. Vesu, and in addition, third line from the bottom. Kevon shaham mafteach biyad Yisrael, if the Jew retains the key. V'yachol likanes l'cheder v'litol ha-chametz misham. And he could go in and take the chametz. Lo samcha da'atei degoy d'mechira gemurahi. The guy won't believe that it's an actual transference. Ella sover de eina mechira, ella lehasir me'alav isur chametz. The guy will understand this isn't a real sale. This is just a trick to get you out of the problem of chametz. Va'al kiyotzu b'zeh kosav Rav Yerucham b'shem Bahag u'bilvad shelo yarim. Fascinating. The Bach says u'bilvad shelo yarim on condition that you're not doing this as a trick. Well, of course, it's a trick. The Bach knows it's a trick. But because it's a trick, he requires it to be completely enforceable. Now, the key thing... Sorry, I didn't mean to... Right. It's almost like the way I imagine it, and I'm sure I'm wrong. You know, nowadays, you give the keys, there's 10 other keys. But I assume, you know, in Poland in 1610, like two guys had to carry the key. You know, there was the key. You didn't even wear it around your neck because it was too heavy. And when you gave him the key, it was clear that you could no longer get in, and he really owned it. Okay? So, this is the turning point in the development of the halach of selling chametz. One second. But it's critical to point out that this the turning point did not involve any changes in halacha. What we had seen till now was you needed to physically transfer the chametz to the possession of the goy in an unconditional transference. All the Bach did was figure out a way of transferring the chametz physically without physically transferring the chametz. Okay? But in order to do that, the Bach had all these chumras about the key and about, you know, the guy believing that he owns it completely. And I couldn't tell you this definitively. You know, you hear all these legends about when the guy didn't give it back and this guy lost. I don't know if any of them are true.
Well, but 5 years ago, and I'm much no more Jerusalem.
I read the article also. I just didn't know if it was true.
Apparently.
Okay, we'll come to that in a minute.
Yeah, he didn't realize the rules of the game. He acted out all
Okay, we'll come to that in a minute. But the fact of the matter is that for the sale of chametz to be legally enforceable halachically, the guy has the right to do that. Now you have to be smart about your contract, right? The point is, you shouldn't sell him $100,000 worth of chametz for 1,000 shekel. You have to work it out. But in theory, he could do it. Okay, now watch fascinating stuff. The next step, it's not so much a step, but it's fascinating, is the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer lived in Germany into the, you know, till 1839. He was basically the Posek Hador in Pressburg. He was a big deal. Watch what happens now. So now we're in this. Now we're in the in the late 1700s. Number 7. Vehine. Says the Chassam Sofer, Bihiyot Adain Hagon Warin Harav Baruch Frankel Zatzal Av Bezin Degila Kosha of Leipnik. These are your homies. Leipnik. You went to camp in Leipnik. Okay. Fine. So the Rabar Frankel was like the Rav Rashi before he was the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, and he says the following thing happened. Ira Ma'aseh. Story time. Shehilshinu Malshinim. What are Malshinim? Excellent. Tattletales. Eitzel Sarei HaMedina Demerin. Okay, the people that these people told on us in Merin. Shehayehudim Mochrim Chemtzam Bishtarot Mibli Shtepel. Could you believe it? The Jews without stamp tax. Shtempel is the Chotemet Chotam HaKira, or the Kaiser. Basically, there was VAT. VAT. Jews are selling their chametz and they're not paying tax. Okay?
Pretty funny.
So,
so the only thing that was selling without tax? That's the problem.
It's unbelievable. You're such a Oev Yisrael. You're Malamed Chus on Kal Yisrael.
I grew up in a shul where we had bars on the window, not for security, to make the people feel at home.
Okay. Ukisheba Hadavar. Okay. You're not allowed to talk anymore. Okay?
Maybe we're going to strike short.
Ukisheba. I said, don't they make you give back the shirt when you get out? Ukisheba hadavar lifnei hachasid, the Kaiser. By the way, this is how you read Shuvos. When it says hachasid, the Kaiser, you know it's going to be good. You don't call the Kaiser a chasid unless he's going to help us out. Amar hadavar, nah, it's a shul chasam sofa, they weren't censored. Amar hadavar yadua, the Kaiser says as follows. Everybody knows. She'ein ze masa umatan shel tagar. The Kaiser goes, everybody knows it's not a real sale. Ella inyan dat religion. Al Kain, it's just a fake, it's a religious sale. Al Kain ein ze b'chiyuv shtempel. So the Kaiser shows up. Imagine the situation, right? This is real life, you know, Jewish history. These slime Jews go and tell on the Orthodox Jews. I'm not going to suggest who they are. We all know. Okay? They go tell on the Orthodox Jews that they're selling chametz without paying the tax. The Kaiser goes, well, of course they don't have to pay the tax. because it's not a real sale. So now, va'al yidei zeh, fourth line towards the end, nolad ktsat safek b'lev ha'gaon zatzal. So the good news is we don't have to pay taxes. The bad news is the Kaiser doesn't think it's a sale. So he's worried. Now, demashma debedina demalchusa posul hashtar hahu. So now they're terrified, because if the Kaiser says you don't have to pay the VAT, it means the Kaiser doesn't recognize it as a sale. If he doesn't recognize it as a sale, then Bali Ro Bali Yimotze.
Why do we care? Why do we care what the guy thinks?
So let's continue. Ulevavi lo kein yidma, says the Chasam Sofer, I disagree. Ki hashtar kosher hein bidin Yisrael. He says, first of all, it's certainly a kosher sale under halachic law. Im ba hagoy lahotzi mekcho b'dayanim, hareu shalo hein bidin umos ha'olam. Says the Chasam Sofer, it's certainly a halachic sale, and if the goy comes and takes possession, and actually, you know, takes ownership of the distillery, under German law, it would be enforceable as well. Mm-hmm. Ella she'oz kishiyitve'enu, I think in court, tzarich l'shalem t'chila hashtempel. All he says is, all that's happening is, it's not a sale right now. It's true, because we're just trying to get out of Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze. But if the guy actually is going to take it after Pesach and sell it, then you have to pay the shtempel, the stamp tax. By the way, there still are places that have stamp taxes. Early in my career, when you transfer stock ownership, there was a stamp tax. Mm-hmm. But it often happened that until you received payment, you didn't have to pay the tax. So the Chasam Sofer is basically saying, look, I'm not saying, he could have said, well, we don't care what the Kaiser says. All we care about is that it's a halachic sale. Why is that problematic? That's problematic because you're selling it to a guy. So on the one hand, all you care about is halacha. It's true. All we want is for it to not to be in my possession over Pesach, because Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze is a halachic standard. The problem is, because you're selling it to a guy, you know, it might be a problem to just rely on halacha. Let's just finish this up. Second to last full line in the middle. Acha Kaiser b'chazdo v'yashruno. He loved the Kaiser. The Kaiser, because he's a holy man, and he's gracious, and he's honest. Amar she'al kiyote b'zeh lo hitil olash temple. Because the purpose of the sale isn't really for regular commerce. So this is the next stage, in that everybody recognizes, including civil authorities, that it's not a real sale. But it could be a real sale. Halachically, it's a real sale, and if post-Pesach the goy wants to actually take ownership of the distillery, he's going to have to pay the stamp tax. So for those purposes, it works. Okay? So you see kind of the next step, in that even here, the goy realizes it's not a real sale, the tax authorities realize it's not a real sale, nevertheless, it's a real sale. Okay, now you come to number 8, the Divrei Chaim. Divrei Chaim, I think, lived already in the 20th century, but I think still in Europe, maybe the 19th century, and they had a discussion about what language. Now you're already moving towards sales that have contracts, maybe more institutionalized the way we do it, although I'm not 100% sure. And the question is, what language should the sales contract be in? Right? Should it be in Hebrew, because it's a halachic contract? Or should it be in German, so the goy will understand what it says? So the Divrei Chaim, the Tzanzer, says as follows, number 8.
Tzanzer is Hungarian.
Oops.
And you can't believe anything in Hungarian.
we're just beating on everybody. Okay. Ubal karchach tzrichim anu lezeh. Delo mahani shum shtar ba'olam bezeh bedinehem. Says the Tzanzer, opposite the Chasam Sofer, he says, we don't care what a civil court says about our sale of chametz. We don't care that it's enforceable in there. D'chok gozar eslam, d'mechira kazo shenaaseh lahafkia isur, eina mechira klal. Says the Divrei Chaim, civil courts are not going to enforce a sale which is just intended to get us out of the problem of chametz on Pesach. U'mishumachi ein tzach shtempel. That's why they don't need a stamp tax. V'chol ha'arkaot lo yichazku ha'mechirazo. He says no court is going to enforce a sale. Yish'al no ma'alat kvoto rato v'yeda. Ask a lawyer, he'll tell you. Ki kenu, that's the fact. V'im ken mahu mechiratenu im eino mo'il b'dineham. So what's a sale of chametz if it's not going to be enforceable in Hungarian courts? Elavada, last full line. De'ein lanu rak din shepaska lanu hatorah. All we have is halacha. You have a problem with Rabbi Yimotze, you have a halachic solution. V'lachein, one second. V'lachein, ein chiluk klal, bein im nichtav b'lashon ashkenaz o b'lashon ha-kodesh. Says it doesn't matter what language it's written in, because all that matters is that a bezdin would recognize the sale, and no one else. Yes?
What about Dina Malchusa Dina?
So, Dina Malchusa Dina doesn't have to apply in every case. It means we can't violate civil law. But it doesn't mean we can't do a transaction that's only halachic. Right? A person, you know, a person who gets married under a chuppah in America, he's not violating Dina Malchusa Dina. If he wants American courts to recognize his wedding, he has to register. But you could do things outside of civil law. So, one second. The critical step here, and I'm not even sure we paskin this way, is that the Divrei Chaim says, forget about trying to make a transaction enforceable in civil law. It doesn't matter at all. Forget about trying to write your contract in English or in Hungarian or in German. None of it matters. What matters is that it's enforceable halachically. The problem with this position, and I want to make it clear, it is a real problem, is that in that case, there won't be any gemiras das. The goy, you need the goy. I mean, the Divrei Chaim, I think, in my opinion, just in learning, went too far. Because if the goy doesn't recognize the sale, doesn't believe that he has rights in the chametz, even halachically, it's going to be a problem. And I think, one second, I think that's one of the problems we've gotten to. When I was in high school, so I grew up in a shtiebel in Long Beach. So the Rebbe was, you know, like right out of Fiddler on the Roof, you know, long white beard, Strymel, didn't speak English. And because everybody went to work, so I was often the witness to the sale of chametz. So he used to sell it to Jimmy. Jimmy was the custodian at South Shore Yeshiva, which was run by the Rebbe's relative. Jimmy was black. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I think he didn't really...
Not black hat.
Oh.
Which I think... No, I say that only because my suspicion was Jimmy didn't speak fluent Yiddish.
He probably didn't speak fluent English either.
And he did speak fluent English. And the Rebbe didn't speak English. And I remember as a 16-year-old saying, like, I can't believe that Jimmy thinks that he now owns the farm. Like, it's true, they did it all, you know, in the formal way that you do this. But I remember thinking, come on, quick.
The Chatham Sofer said it really...
He disagrees.
No, it's not based on anything.
No, absolutely not. It's just, I think it's like the next step in the development where the Divrei Chaim says, stop trying to make it enforceable in civil courts. But I don't think we hold like him.
No, but we all say if the guy drinks your whiskey and he says he's buying it, he drank it and he owned it and you have no recourse.
Correct, but I'm saying that if you make a Kenyan Chalipin with Jimmy, he's not really going to believe that he could drink it. Uh-huh. That's what I'm worried about. Yes.
I don't know. People around here now, I'm out of Toronto, so this is a story out of Manhattan. Apparently, Lincoln Square Shul has an add-on to the system which seems to solve certain of the halakhic problem. Apparently, there's a random person selected from the Balabate.
Many shuls do that.
Who's... Oh, okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Where they actually lose all their chametz.
Yeah, so I'm getting there. There's a lot of things you could do. All I want to point out is, even from the Divrei Chaim to what we do, it's almost unrecognizable. It's very hard to trace what happens, you know, from the early 20th century to where we got today, where nobody goes to their neighbor, okay, Nefra, we don't have anybody, and sells their chametz. Now we have kind of this institutionalized sale, where my guess is, it's just a complete guess, my guess is that as it became more popular, people made mistakes. When they sold, you know, every person in the town had to find a guy to sell it to, and then every person, and the word went out that this is a great guy, he's completely reliable. So you had 100 people waiting to sell it to this guy, and he didn't want to do it. And so the rabbi said, you know what, why don't I become the go-between? That way we'll make sure that everything is done halachically, whatever, you know, where that's moved to, you know, clicking a button on the internet, which I have to say for myself, like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense. You're in Australia, you know, and I know, like, Chabad likes to say, now other people do it, you know, any place in the world you sell, it just, it's hard to imagine.
But at the end of the day, in Ephrat, for instance, or with Rabbi Nate Sohar, surely there is a rabbi that assembles all these internet forms, just like it was a piece of paper.
I would hope.
And he does some kind of kid in with an Arab in our case, right?
Great. I just think that the Arab, when you tell the Arab, oh, good news, you now own $100 of beer in Michael McShanty's house in Ireland.
And it's not on a piece of paper?
No, my thing is that it's so far away that it's hard to imagine a guy actually believing that if he wanted to, he could go to Ireland and knock on the door, and he doesn't have the address, and he doesn't know where it is, and they didn't fill in any of the information. I worry about that.
The truth is, it really is just an extension of the concept of
absolutely
being in a house somewhere, and you're having access to that room.
Absolutely. All I'm saying is, at a certain point, the reality could overtake the fiction. When I was in, I was at the Bach's grave at this time of year, a few years ago, before Pesach, with a whole group of guys, and with Baruch Digi, Rosh Hashiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion. So we're at the Bach's grave. So I said, we should talk about, you know, the Bach's innovation in Mechiras Chametz. We're here, it's a week before Pesach, and he said, you know, the Bach would be rolling over right now if he saw what we do based on his. Now,
you could have asked him.
But there's one more issue here. There's one more issue, and it's the Tzitz Eliezer, which will help clarify, and then I'll make a few points. The Tzitz Eliezer died recently. He certainly lived into the 21st century. He was a significant posek in the State of Israel, and watch what happens. She'elato Ashniyahi. Here's the second question. It's a long tshuva. Alasher pe'amim rabotu nishal me anashim shenisharu lohem divrei chametz shehem yikre erech. People find out that they have very valuable chametz before Pesach. Interesting. His example is kumo motzarei basar v'dagim mukpaim shemu'uravim b'chametz. Okay, you're not a wealthy person, and you open the freezer and you have, you know, tons of breaded schnitzel. You thought you had eaten them. You didn't eat them. Now, what's the issue? Ki michad gisa, from one perspective, misha yirtze lahachmir v'yizrok et ha-motzarim halalu harei l'chora ya'avor alav minat Torah debal tashchis. To just take all this valuable meat and throw it in the garbage, isn't that an isra of bal tashchis? You're not supposed to throw out good food. U'me'idach gisa, on the other hand, harei sof yesh mitzvat bi'ur chametz. Don't we have a mitzvah of destroying chametz? Ve'al kein Eich yesh linhog b'inyan zeh. What should we do? See, he frames it a different way. Forget about this. You know, the guy doesn't want to sell. He frames it a different way, which is, what's better, to throw it in the garbage or to sell it and somehow not, you know, not be over bal tashchis? Tshuva. No one's going to like this answer, but no one's going to be able to complain either. Da avid kemar avid, who da avid kemar avid. Whatever you do, you're right. Okay, whoever does like this is right, whoever does like that is right. That's what literally means. V'hamachmir, it's not even clear what it means to be machmir, that's what's so great about it. Eino over klalu klal al bal tashchis, person who throws it out. It's not bal. De'ein kol mitzvah limkor chemtzo. What a chiddush. This is where you see halachos completely moved. We reached a point where people feel like it's a mitzvah to sell your chametz. Oh, I didn't sell my chametz. Oh my God. You know, this is no mitzvah to sell chametz. It is a mitzvah saseh to get rid of chametz before Pesach. V'hameikil, but a person who sells gam kein enenu over al isur. He didn't do anything wrong. V'chutz ma sheruba deruba inshi, most people, kebalei achaniot, like store owners, v'hadom elohem, mochrim b'mechiratam gam chametz be'en. He says, look outside, look, people sell their chametz all the time. People who own stores certainly do. Not only that, v'notnim lahem k'tav hechsher shemicharo chemtzam kidin. Right after Pesach, no one here is going to shop any place or go to a restaurant that doesn't have a little thing, sign up that says, I sold my chametz. Yadana gam betalmide chachamim ugdolei Torah shabu lechabdom ulaachlam im letzeit achag. He says, also I know from people who sell chametz be'en. What's going on here is as follows. Tzitzel, I think, is hinting at how he doesn't think it's great, but he's certainly not going to try to undermine the sale of chametz. So how did we get to where we are, and what should be our approach? This is all my personal opinion. I think the one fact in the development of halacha that I didn't point out to you is the fact that I'm pretty sure my great-grandparents didn't have a refrigerator. And they certainly didn't have a pantry. I didn't have processed food. My guess is, you know, in terms of facts changing, 100 years ago, even less, 70 years ago, nobody had more than a day or two of food in their house. There weren't big pantries, you open them up, oh my, you know. So there was no real need for selling chametz. And with any bit of planning, you know, you got rid of your chametz, which was the mitzvah d'oraisa, to get rid of your chametz. What changed is refrigerators and freezers and processed foods.
And money. We had more money, so we had whiskey.
Well, forget the whiskey. I don't know what to do with
our economic status.
I don't know how to deal with whiskey right now. I'm talking about, here's what I think is really going on. And this is where you get to where halacha goes beyond itself, where chumros turn into kulos, and we have to be careful. Here's what happens. What happens is somebody opens up their pantry and it's full. And you go, oh my God, you're not going to get rid of all this stuff. It's worth a lot. You know, everything here is chametz. I'll just sell my, you know, I'm not going to clean up even, I'll just sell all my chametz. It's a mistake. It's a chumra that's fake, meaning it's true, all our spices, we don't want to use them on Pesach because maybe, you know, we use them with chametz. But they're not chametz. All this stuff in our pantries, if we have pantries, they're kidneys, they're mixed them things, they're not real chametz. If you look in your pantry, you know what's real chametz? Bread, which is not going to survive Pesach anyway. Pasta.
Soy sauce.
Okay, so it has 5% wheat. You eat your soy sauce with a spoon or with a fork. Okay, it has a tiny bit. It's taroves chametz. What I'm saying is, because we become so frum, where everything is chametz, we've reached a situation where we might as well sell everything because it's all chametz. It's not all chametz. And anybody who 2 weeks before Pesach looks in their pantry and goes, you know what? I got to eat this stuff over the next 2 weeks.
That's what we're doing.
It's a mitzvah of tashbisu, right? I have pasta every night for supper now. Okay? It's a mitzvah of tashbisu. And when Erev Pesach comes, I don't really have any chametz. Again, I don't know what to do with liquor. But liquor is a separate thing. When I used to live in Teaneck, this happened once. I had to go in someone's house on Pesach. There's a person who went to, like, you know, Florida to some hotel, meaning they're rich. They flew their family. They went to some fancy place. You go into their house, there's like cookies out on the counter because they didn't clean up anything. Why would they, you know?
They sold
everything. Why? To save $40 of pasta? They just spent $25,000 to fly their family to a hotel? It's ridiculous. It's just that people think everything is chametz. So if everything is chametz, what am I going to do? I just have to sell everything. There's no point in cleaning up. The answer is we own very, very few things that are chametz. And I think with a little planning, it's true, you're allowed to sell chametz. I'm not here to tell you not to sell chametz. But you see, it's gotten out of control. Yes. And to say, you know, I'm selling chametz, it's scattered all over my house, I think is a big mistake. I think we have a right to get, you know, we should get rid of our chametz before Pesach, mostly by eating it. We should burn a little bit before Pesach. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. There's no reason to sell stuff that's of no value. It's true, if you have a valuable liquor cabinet,
that's the real issue today.
So if that's the real, but I'm saying it's different because you used it as an excuse. Because if you talk about a sale, to go to the rabbi and say, I have 5 bottles of Johnny Walker Black Label and they're in a box. And they're in this place.
Blue Label.
and they're in this box. And that's what I'm selling you. That's different than going to the rabbi and saying, I got chametz all over my house. You know, this way, at least in my mind, you know, Guy knows, Ahmed shows up. He's looking for you, Johnny Walker.
He can't drink it. And he has a claim to that.
I'm going to go over time if you don't stop talking. And he has a claim to that. But mostly, I want to point out the two things and end with this. Hopefully, I've shown you a pretty good example of where halacha develops. in that the Bach showed up and had this huge innovation. He didn't change halacha. All the Bach showed up and did was say, I could change the facts surrounding it. Now it's true, you know, processed food and all these things required halacha to deal with issues that it didn't have to deal with before. But that doesn't mean we have to rely on kulos that don't exist. On the other hand, we have to be realistic. Most things in our house are not chametz be'en. Most things in our house are either kitnios or stuff that we wouldn't use on Pesach because it doesn't say, you know, OUP on it or whatever, or taroves chametz, all of which is easy. But I think to sell pasta, for people in this room to sell pasta instead of just eating it or getting rid of it before Pesach, like, I don't know why you would play that game. I don't know if there's any need. Again, liquor gathered in one place seems to have a different, I think, is different factually.
How are you going to finish it?
Huh?
How are you going to finish it?
The pasta?
No, the liquor.
Well,
no, so you do so. I'm not
drunk as a pig.
I'm not saying to finish it. All I'm saying is to finish your real chametz ben, I think, is a mitzvah. Baal Tashlis, you know, you could avoid Baal Tashlis. We can work this thing out in a way that makes sense. Last thing, Rabbi Tendler in Muncie, I read this on the internet. You know, he did this as seriously as possible, legally as well, which means he sold the chametz not to, you know, Jimmy from South Shore. He sold the chametz to the vice president of UPS, who lived in Muncie. First of all, the vice president of UPS, A, was a very rich man who could have bought all the chametz. Second,
he could get it.
He could get it all delivered because he had all the guys in brown shorts and shirts who could go to your house. And
the problem is he was Jewish. That was the problem.
They had an enforceable legal contract. There was a guarantor. They did all the possible kinyanim. They drank l'chaim. They shook hands. They did all these things. And he took the keys, I think. I think it wasn't just that somebody knew where your key was. I think originally they actually gave him the keys, which could be messy. I'm saying the more things you could do,
his mother was Jewish. That was the problem.
Chag Kosher Sameach to everybody.
Thank you, Eli Weber. Thank you. If you don't want to sell it, you can give your chametz to the appropriate, your whiskey to the appropriate people. We'll hold on to it for you.
I think what you said about